KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Alaska State House has passed a bill that would help protect foster kids from unnecessary stays in acute psychiatric care facilities. It's likely to become law, and if so, kids will have the right to a court hearing within 7 days of entering a facility to determine if the placement is necessary. Almost 70% of foster kids in the state are Alaska Native or American Indian. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra has more.
Tali Stone was 9 years old when her foster mother brought her to North Star, an acute psychiatric facility in Anchorage. Stone says during the intake, her foster mom exaggerated her behavior.
Even the staff said themselves, "I'm not sure why you're here." And I was like, "I'm not sure either."
Stone was at North Star for 4 weeks, according to her psychiatric records. And over the next 2 years, she was admitted to North Star a total of 4 times. Stone is one of the thousands of kids under the care of the Office of Children's Services in Alaska, or OCS, who have spent time, sometimes unnecessarily, in acute psychiatric facilities. OCS is under-resourced with a high staff turnover rate and a serious shortage of foster families. But Amanda Mativier, who runs the nonprofit Facing Foster Care, says that lack of placements means foster kids stay in psychiatric facilities for too long.
They do an intake at a hospital, they get a diagnosis, and then they linger there.
Right now, kids have the right to a court hearing within 30 days of admittance, but the bill would reduce that timeline to 7 days. At the hearing, all people invested in the kids' care would have to be there: birth parents, foster families, tribes, behavioral health providers, and OCS. Every kid over 10 would also have their own lawyer who could advocate for them being in the least restrictive setting appropriate. State Representative Andrew Gray sponsored the bill.
The absolute human rights violation of having your freedoms completely taken away and no one coming to help you, that alone is enough that we have to fix it.
Mativier worked with kids in foster care to help draft the bill. She says it would add a sense of urgency to the process of assessing the care.
We need to act quickly on either identifying a higher level of care or releasing them.
Tali Stone says she never got a hearing at all to assess whether she should be there. She says she really hopes this bill passes. She wants foster kids in institutions to know they're not forgotten. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
The U.S. Department of Justice on Tuesday announced increased resources to Indian Country to investigate violent crimes, including related to missing and murdered Indigenous people. According to the department, the FBI will send 60 personnel to temporary assignments over 6 months to support 10 field offices, including in Albuquerque, Denver, Phoenix, Portland, and Seattle. The FBI will work with the Bureau of Indian Affairs and tribal law enforcement. The personnel will work with the BIA's Missing and Murdered Unit. In a statement, Attorney General Pam Bondi said crime rates in American Indian and Alaska Native communities are unacceptably high. She says by surging FBI resources and collaborating closely with U.S. attorneys and tribal law enforcement to prosecute cases, the DOJ will help deliver accountability these communities deserve. According to the Department of Justice, at the beginning of fiscal year 2025, the FBI's Indian Country program had about 4,300 open investigations. That includes death investigations, child abuse, domestic violence, and sexual abuse investigations. U.S. Senators Lisa Murkowski, chair of the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, and Brian Schatz, vice chair, are leading a hearing Wednesday on Indian education. The hearing in Washington, D.C. will examine federal programs. Witnesses include leaders of the National Indian Education Association and the American Indian Higher Education Consortium. Educators in Indian Country and tribal leaders are among those who've been raising concerns about Indian education under Trump administration policies. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. More at AARP.org.
Enbridge strives to be a good steward of the environment, a safe operator of essential energy infrastructure, and a good neighbor. More on Enbridge's Indigenous Reconciliation Action Plan at Enbridge.com. Enbridge proudly supports this program.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Every school needs quality leadership and quality teachers, and Alaska's losing their educational leaders at a very rapid rate.
A school principal pleads with state lawmakers to increase base student funding. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, April 2nd. Good evening, I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, lawmakers approve a new screening policy at the state capitol.
There are regular risks of and threats of violence. Political atmosphere is very charged.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If domestic violence has touched your life, know that you are not alone. You have the power to break free and build a future filled with love and respect. There's hope and help waiting for you. For free and confidential support, visit notaloneak.org to speak to someone who's trained to help. Every Alaskan deserves to feel safe. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Ketchikan is currently facing a controversial restructuring of the island's elementary schools, and in recent weeks, multiple school board members and the district superintendent have resigned. The principal of Ketchikan High School joined other school district officials from across the state to testify in front of the Alaska House and Senate on Monday. He was there to tell lawmakers that the kids are not all right. KRBD's Jack Darrow has more, and a content warning, this story talks about suicide and might be disturbing for some listeners.
Rick Dormer is the principal of Ketchikan High School. He also leads the statewide association for high school principals.
Every school needs quality leadership and quality teachers, and Alaska's losing their educational leaders at a very rapid rate.
He was speaking at a joint hearing with the state House and Senate, their education committees.
We are trending the wrong direction.
Dormer was one of a handful of officials and association heads from school districts like the Kenai Peninsula, Anchorage, and Galena, plus the director of the Alaska Educator Retention and Recruitment Center. The testimony comes as lawmakers are deciding how much the state is going to put towards education funding next school year. For years now, Alaska schools have faced stagnant state funding, rising costs, and budget uncertainty. Many, nearly all, have had to cut back resources. And Ketchikan is in the process right now of restructuring the island's elementary schools and combining some classes to help reduce the budget deficit. The plan at every stage has been met with protests, and community members have even put together their own alternative plans to cut staff and combine facilities that they think would be lower impact. But it's not just facilities being affected. Dormer says schools need resources for students' mental health.
Unfortunately, I can come to you and tell you that just the last month, Ketchikan lost a teen by suicide, and we had another teen attempt to take their life, was life flighted out via suicide. They're going to be okay. It's just so real, and it's right in front of us.
Alaska leads the nation in teen suicides, according to data from the U.S. Department of Justice. Dormer says that roughly 40% of K-High students have reported feeling so anxious, tense, scared every day for 2 weeks in a row that they couldn't finish their work. So sad or hopeless that they didn't want to do the things they normally like doing.
And we also believe these statistics are consistent across the state.
K-High has a social worker on staff to help students navigate the depression minefield of being a high schooler. The position is funded by a federal grant.
That's for over 500 students. We have one social worker.
The National Association for School Social Workers generally recommends schools have at least one social worker for every 250 students. Dormer says most schools in Alaska can't afford that. They can't afford to hire counselors or social workers right now at all, and they can't rely on federal grants.
As a principal, I can tell you that hiring a counselor is about impossible at this time. And then if you have the funds in the first place, How can you find them, and then how can you retain them?
Retention came up a few times in Dormer's testimony. It was a big part of nearly every testimony during the joint session. Officials said Alaska has a problem keeping teachers, and continuous budget uncertainties are compounding that. Like, another testifier referenced University of Alaska Anchorage research showing that high turnover was costing districts an extra $20,000 per teacher to recruit, hire, and train. And retaining administrators is also a problem. In a matter of weeks this spring, Ketchikan's school board president, another school board member, and the district superintendent resigned. Dormer came to Ketchikan in 2022 after over a decade leading the high school in Petersburg. But he said he's now actively interviewing for other jobs too, outside of Alaska, in Oregon.
Because if I go to Oregon, I can get a defined benefit package, I can have higher wages, I can have a lower cost of living, and I don't have to take the time and expense to get on a Boeing jet to see my family. It is a challenge. We want to stay. I want to stay. But we're also highly educated professionals. We have personal goals. We have professional goals. And I can tell you that there are a lot of options out there.
Dormer told lawmakers that Alaska's teens deserve high-quality teachers and administrators, ones who want to stick around. There's a bill before the state Senate right now that would increase per-student funding for Alaska schools by $1,000. It already passed the House. If it makes it all the way through the Senate, it'll end up on Governor Mike Dunleavy's desk. In Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
If you or someone you know may be considering suicide or is in crisis, contact the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline by dialing 988. Meanwhile, a group of education leaders from tribal organizations spoke today at a U.S. Senate hearing against the dissolution of the Federal Department of Education and for protecting the programs that support Indigenous students. The hearing followed an executive order President Trump signed last month to close the department. Rosita Kahani-Worrell, the president of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, was one of the witnesses at the hearing. Worrell, who is Tlingit, spoke about the challenges of Indigenous education and the persistent lack of funding, especially in Alaska, given the state's fiscal situation.
Despite these challenges, we can confidently state that through our culture-based programs that we have integrated into schools with DOE funding, we have witnessed measurable educational achievement among Native students, as well as improvements in their social and emotional well-being.
Others who spoke at the hearing said that funding is important for addressing high rates of suicide and sexual assault among Native students and experiences such as homelessness, foster care, and substance abuse. Senator Lisa Murkowski co-led the oversight hearing. She said that the department's programs help the government fulfill its federal Indian Trust responsibility, a legal obligation to protect Indigenous people's rights and well-being. Murkowski highlighted programs that fund tutoring, language initiatives, and post-secondary education opportunities for Native students. She also pointed to the Alaska Native Education Program that supports curricula and academic and cultural activities for Native kids.
We need to make progress on the ground, and we owe it to our Native kids across the country.
Murkowski said that one idea to work around the department closure would be to transfer the programs to other agencies and to administer funding through the states. However, Murkowski and several witnesses, including Worrell with Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, pointed out that such a transition could be detrimental to tribal sovereignty and lead to additional bureaucratic hurdles and delays. And visitors to the Alaska State Capitol will soon have to go through a metal detector and have their belongings screened in an X-ray machine. It's after lawmakers approved a new screening policy on Monday, and as Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, not everybody's happy about the change after decades of open access to the seat of government in Juneau.
If you ask Representative Sarah Hannon, screening Capitol visitors just makes sense. After all, 37 other states already do it.
There are regular risks of and threats of violence. Political atmosphere is very charged in general.
The new policy was approved in a 9-4 vote, and Hannon, a Juneau Democrat, says it's something that's been on lawmakers' minds for years. She chairs the Legislative Council. That's a joint House and Senate committee that makes decisions about the day-to-day business of running the Capitol complex here in downtown Juneau.
I don't believe we can wait until we have an incident where someone is harmed or a weapon is drawn before we take action to make the building safe and accessible for anyone who wants to come in.
She points to things like the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol as evidence of the need to beef up security. Opponents of the new policy, meanwhile, say it makes the Capitol less accessible to the Alaskans lawmakers are elected to represent. Big Lake Republican Representative Kevin McCabe, who, as it happens, is a longtime airline pilot, says he doesn't mind going through security.
But at the end of the day, I represent my constituents, and they told me very clearly last summer that they didn't think that we should lock up the people's capital like that.
McCabe isn't on the decision-making committee this time around, but he opposed it while vice chair of the council last year. Though it's a minority of the 13-member council, the opposition crosses party and caucus lines. Fairbanks Democratic Representative Ashley Carrick says she's not so sure it's needed.
We don't have an extraordinarily or unprecedented increase in security threats. And I, again, want to err on the side of keeping the Capitol as accessible as possible.
The head of the nonpartisan legislative affairs agency says she expects screening to begin on April 14th at the earliest. Senator L.V. Gray Jackson chaired the legislative council last year when it rejected a similar policy. The Anchorage Democrat supported adding a checkpoint, and she says the new screening policy is a perfectly reasonable way to balance accessibility and security.
Number one, it's going to take less than 30 seconds for people to walk through a metal detector. Okay. And when it comes to folks not being able to get to Juneau, the good news is everything we do is broadcast. Everything.
But there's a certain magic to being in the room where it happens, to steal a line from Lin-Manuel Miranda. And some lawmakers think the added security measures will keep constituents away. That's the perspective of Representative Mike Prox. He's a Republican from North Pole who voted against the new policy.
I am willing to accept the risk of some crazy person coming in, disrupting things or beating somebody up. That's just me, because I think it is important to have a welcoming atmosphere at the state capitol.
But at the same time, Prox says he gets it. It's not a risk everybody's willing to take, and he says it's important for the people who staff the Capitol building to feel safe at work. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Star, Anchorage's iconic reindeer mascot, is euthanized after a possible poisoning.
His health was so bad that he was not doing very well. He was suffering.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The greatest compliment to a public media station is when a listener becomes a member. So do your part today by becoming a part of the team officially. Thank you for making a donation.
Start your day with a quick look at the most important stories from around the state with Alaska Morning News, your dose of headlines each weekday morning. With reporters covering every corner of Alaska, you can be sure you're up to date on the stories that matter to Alaskans. Join me, Ava White, for Alaska Morning News, weekdays on your local public radio station.
The University of Alaska Anchorage recently announced it's restructuring how its Native Student Services program functions. But some Alaska Native students are protesting the change. They worry the program will become less responsive to their specific needs. Last month, UAA officials announced that starting July 1st, the Native Student Services program will be renamed the Indigenous and Rural Student Center and combined with the Pride Center and the Multicultural Student Services program under one umbrella in the university's Community and Belonging Department. UAA Student Services Vice Chancellor Deanne Woodard made the announcement in a video to students.
This reorganization process began at the beginning of the fiscal year and aims to promote fiscal health and address staff capacity.
The program changes come as the wider University of Alaska has begun to phase out language around diversity, equity, and inclusion in response to federal pressure from the Trump administration. The university recently removed the term Alaska Native from its Alaska Native Science and Engineering program website, where it's now referred to simply by its acronym ANSEP. In an email, UAA spokesman Austin Osborne said Native Student Services Program, or NSS, used to report directly to Woodard as its own program rather than be grouped in with others. He says the changes were in the works before Trump took office and, quote, student affairs leadership has been working diligently to address budget concerns and identify all possible ways to ensure fiscal health for the entire division, end quote. The move has drawn concerns from students like Native Student Council President Rhea Larson. Larson is Yupik with family originally from the Yukon-Kuskokwim village of Nunapichuk.
This means that NSS is not going to have its own funding or budget. Someone else outside of NSS gets the final say, which means there's no self-determination for the Native staff or students here.
Larson is one of over 1,000 people who've signed an online petition asking for NSS to remain independent. She says staff with the program are very responsive, reaching out directly to Alaska Native students to help get them signed up for classes and assist with other needs.
The guidance is a lot better because they understand where Native students are coming from and how because of our backgrounds, it's a little bit, it's different for us coming into university than it is for other students.
She says the NSS program also facilitates traditional activities like beading and subsistence programs and brings in community tribal partners. Larson says information has been scarce since the NSS restructuring announcement. A letter she and others have been circulating to NSS students asserts that the current head of the program, Assistant Director Valerie Svankara, has been put on administrative leave, leaving the program with one staff member right now. Larson says that comes at an inconvenient time when students are registering for classes.
They have back-to-back appointments every time registration comes along, so I can't imagine like what it's going to be like now with just one staff member.
The letter being circulated by Larson and others also claims that both staff members of the NSS program will be laid off in June. Osborne with UAA declined to comment on the status of NSS staff, citing HR privacy policies. An automated email response from Svankara stated that she was out of the office, quote, from March 26th until further notice. Advocates of the NSS program are organizing a protest scheduled for Thursday at 1:30 p.m. in front of UAA's Consortium Library. Two Anchorage Assembly incumbents are poised to retain their seats, according to preliminary election results from Tuesday night. With about 39,000 ballots counted, the two incumbents up for re-election, North Anchorage's Daniel Voland and West Anchorage's Cameron Perez-Verdia, are holding comfortable leads over their challengers. Despite a roughly 17-point lead over his closest opponent, Voland says he's not declaring victory just yet, but he's thankful for the support he's received.
Gratitude for my supporters, volunteers, people who contributed, and people who believe in the work that I've been doing.
Meanwhile, four new faces will join the body after three incumbents decided against running for re-election and a fourth was moved out of his district. The Assembly has maintained a center-left majority in recent years, and newcomer Jared Gerker is poised to represent Chugiak and Eagle River as one of a few conservatives on the body. However, Gerker says he's looking forward to forming relationships with the Assembly members and working on the city's mostly nonpartisan work.
It crosses party lines, right? We're talking about zoning, we're talking about permitting reform, we're talking about all that stuff, right? And that's not something that's strictly Republican or strictly Democrat.
Yarrow Silvers, Aaron Baldwin Day, and Keith McCormick are leading in their races to represent East, Midtown, and South Anchorage, respectively. Election officials will post additional results over the next 2 weeks, with results set to be certified on April 22nd. Meanwhile, Alaska's population as a whole has been inching upward over the last few years after a period of decline. But as Avery Elfelt reports for the Alaska Desk, the same can't be said if you zoom in on certain parts of the state, including Haines and Skagway.
Alaska has returned to a period of slow but steady population growth, as births outpace deaths, making up for migration out of the state. That's according to this month's report from the State Department of Labor and Workforce Development. David Howell is the state demographer. He says the statewide population has been trending higher since 2020, but that this year's increase was even larger.
Our net migration losses haven't been that big, and we've been able to make up for net migration losses with what we refer to as natural increase, which is just births outnumbering deaths.
Alaska as a whole saw a 0.3% population increase between 2023 and 2024. That's up slightly on average since 2020. Howell attributes the bulk of that growth to one area.
All the growth since 2020 has pretty much been on that rail belt running, you know, from Kenai up through Fairbanks, with the Mat-2 kind of being our one standout area that's grown consistently for decades now.
It comes in sharp contrast to other regions, including Western Alaska and Southeast. The population of every borough in Southeast, for instance, has declined over the last 4 years on average. Skagway specifically has seen its population drop by over 2% on average per year, the largest decrease region-wide. Howell says Skagway has yet to recover from the pandemic, which hit the borough's tourism-dependent economy especially hard and limited migration. But the decline in Southeast generally, he says, is largely due to its quickly aging population.
There's not as many people at high fertility ages, and you have more people at these ages where mortality is higher. And in fact, Skagway actually has a natural decrease, so deaths have actually outnumbered births in Skagway.
Meanwhile, in Haines, Alaska's oldest borough, the population has dropped between 1 and 2% on average each year. Local officials say it's becoming increasingly difficult to attract younger families to the area due to insufficient housing and childcare. Haines Mayor Tom Morfitt raised the issue during a recent meeting of the Haines Planning Commission, the commission has been working on an ordinance that would aim to create more housing in town by making it easier for homeowners to build auxiliary dwelling units on their properties.
The housing crisis in this town is extreme. We cannot keep teachers. We cannot attract new employees.
It's a different story in Western Alaska, which has also seen population decline over the same time, says Howell, the state demographer. There, the population is much younger, but decreasing as people move away to find work in other parts of the state or the lower 48. In Haines, I'm Avery Elfelt.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
GCI, keeping schools and students connected across the state with a resilient and redundant network. Details at gci.com/education.
Local sponsors do right by their business and for the community by supporting public media stations. Thank you for considering adding your corporate support. You'll be in good company.
Get your weekly look at the trends, policies, and issues that impact your wallet in Alaska with the Alaska Economic Report. From local businesses to fiscal policy to big industries like fishing, tourism, and oil and gas, I'll cover the high-stakes economic issues that matter to Alaskans all over the state. That's the Alaska Economic Report with me, Ava White, on your local public radio station each week.
Star, an iconic reindeer who lived in downtown Anchorage, died Tuesday, weeks after he was possibly poisoned. Star was the seventh reindeer to live at the corner of 10th Avenue and I Street. Star was euthanized Tuesday, according to his owner, Albert Whitehead.
His health was so bad that he was not doing very well. He was suffering.
Star was a male reindeer who would have been 8 next month, Whitehead says. On average, reindeer live around 15 years. Star was the target of several alleged crimes earlier this year. In February, Whitehead says he caught someone spraying an unknown substance into Star's face, and he later developed pneumonia. He says he thought Star was recovering, but things took a turn.
Suddenly he relapsed and some other issues developed. So we really don't know what caused him to die. The vets now are going through doing necropsy with him, and we won't have the results of that for a couple weeks.
Star was rescued from the reindeer farm in Palmer. Having a reindeer living in downtown Anchorage is part of a long-time tradition started by a couple, Ivan and Oro Stewart, in the 1960s. When asked if the tradition would continue with an eighth reindeer, Whitehead said it's a tough question.
Under the current situation, would you be willing to put another animal into that enclosure, knowing there's somebody out there that has doing this kind of stuff to him?
Whitehead called the reindeer Star Number 7. All of the reindeer before him were females. Meanwhile, the Chamai Dance Festival in Bethel is both a celebration of the vibrant state of Alaska native dance and a nod to the people throughout history who've kept it alive against great odds. As KYUK's Evan Erickson reports, this year, the festival chose to honor a late elder from Emonik who embodied this spirit.
In the 1988 film Drums of Winter, Jagitnak Stanley Waska holds a small child in his arms as he sits in his kitchen in the Yukon Delta community of Emonik, singing in Yupik. He taps his foot to the beat in place of the typical beat of a Jayak frame drum. Inside the Kuskik, the communal house and spiritual center of the village, the film follows Waska as he leads dances and tells stories that have survived through the centuries, through disease, famine, and the forces of cultural assimilation. As Waska says in the film, on good nights, on some evenings, the drummers and singers are at their sharpest. Everything is together and right on key. Those nights make you want to dance from way inside, to sing from way inside. The majority of Drums of Winter was shot in Emonik in 1977. Since its release, it has racked up awards across the world and established itself as an authentic portrait of Yupik dance and potlatch tradition on the Yukon Delta. The film was screened at this year's Chamai Dance Festival in Bethel, which was also dedicated to Waska, who died in 1986. Today, both the culture of sharing and dance tradition remain strong in Emonik. Waska's son Raymond leads the community's dance group, made up of the direct descendants of many who appear in the film. In shooting Drums of Winter, filmmaker Sarah Elder and Leonard Kamerling wanted to break new ground using a collaborative community approach. It steered clear of narrative voiceover and gave the film's subjects a direct say in the production process. Part of this collaboration meant bringing on Stanley Waska's nephew, Waukee Charles, to work with translating and interpreting footage. At this year's Chamai Festival, Charles hosted the film screenings and offered context about the outsiders who sought to capture daily life in Amonik.
These two folks were Gusak, and yet they came in silently and said nothing but recorded.
Charles grew up in Amonik and is now a professor of Yupik language at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He says his ties to his community's rich dance tradition were severed at the age of 12 when he was sent far away for schooling at the Wrangell Institute in Southeast Alaska.
When I should have learned, I was taken away to boarding school. Instead of coming home after boarding school, I went to college. I wanted to give back to my people through English, the story that they themselves cannot express.
Charles says he fondly remembers weeks spent on the mouth of the Yukon River with his uncle at fish camp. He says there was nothing pretentious about his uncle, despite his status as a community leader.
He grew up with very, very humble beginnings, and he died humbly. And what kept him to be the person that he is that he had that spiritual connection between the new and the old.
Waska was also a longtime Catholic deacon, and Drums of Winter is peppered with the historical writings of early Jesuit missionaries who called the foundations of Yupik belief into question after arriving in Western Alaska in the late 1800s. Some of the passages in the film are shocking in their scorn. In an excerpt written in 1894, one priest describes a famine that struck a mission near modern-day St. Mary's on the Lower Yukon River.
I consider the starvation as a blessing of God for the mission. The help I am obliged to give will be remembered. Calamities have always been a special time of grace and the means to obtain conversion of sinners.
Despite this dark history, Charles remembers his uncle as both a culture bearer and a devout Catholic.
He prayed and prayed and prayed all the time. And there are times when at night we'd be so tired and yet he wanted to pray.
Watching Drums of Winter, one gets the sense that just as often, Waska's mind was in the Kuskik thinking about Yuhak. As Waska explains at the end of the film, I don't enjoy other things like movies, white people's dances, basketball games, or bingo. Even if they have Yupik dancing day after day, I don't think I will ever get tired of it. I came into my awareness with this dancing. I grew into consciousness with it. Just like the Kuskik scene in the film, many Yupik traditions have faded into the past. But were he alive today at the Chamai Dance Festival dedicated to his memory, Waska might be proud to know that there are many who will also never tire of dancing. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Jack Darrell in Ketchikan, Aliona Nidzen and Ava White in Anchorage, Eric Stone in Juneau, Avery Elfelt in Haines, and Evan Erickson in Bethel. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. Annie Fight helped produce tonight's show. And I'm Wesley Early. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, proud of its ties to Alaska communities since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com. The law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.
Tennessee. Lord, I've really been real stressed. Down and out, losing grass. Although I am black and brown, problems got me.
damn tough. I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone. I never at once felt so alone. I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire. So Lord, I ask you to be my guiding force of truth. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
Take me to
yeah. Lord, it's obvious we got a relationship. We're talking to each other every night and day. Although you're superior over me, we talk to each other in a friendship way. Then out of nowhere, you tell me to break out of the country and into more countries. Fast eyes burn into rhythms. Where the ghost of childhood haunts me. Walk the roads my forefathers walked. Climb the trees my forefathers hung from. Pass those trees for all their wisdom. They tell me my ears are so young. Go back to whence you came. My family tree, my family name. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
Take me to a
down to Holly Springs. Razadon and Baba, they went down to Peachtree. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes!
Now I see the importance of history. While my people be in the mess that they be. Many journeys to freedom made in vain by brothers on the corner playing ghetto games. I ask you, Lord, why you enlighten me without the enlightenment of all my folks. He said, cause I set myself on a quest for truth, and he was there to quench my thirst. But I am still thirsty. Lord, allow me to drink some more. He said, what I am searching for are the answers to all which are in front of me. The ultimate truth started to get blurry. For some strange reason, it had to be. It was all a dream about Tennessee.
Take me to
come and dance with me. Dance grasping me into the colors of the dust. Dance with me into the colors of the dust. The paths we're walking on, they crumble behind us. But we leave now, they will never find us. If this crazy world spins itself down dust, I wanna be with you. I'm gonna be with you in the color. When you again start open with your arms wide open, come on, dance with me. Oh, dance with me into the colors of the dusk, and all will be right. We'll be right, dancing like water with the light. Oh, dance with me. Won't you dance the color of the dust? Oh, dance with me into the colors of the dust. Dance with me to the colors of the dust.
back from the ledge, my friend. You could cut ties with all the lies that you've been living in. And if you do not want to see me again, I would understand.
She's playing hard to get. She's playing hard to get. you